David Mark is one of a new breed of TV scholars who treats the medium with the same respect and critical scrutiny given to other art forms. His new book, Prime Time, Prime Movers, is a guide to the TV producers who have shaped the medium. Mark thinks that although until recently producers have been fairly invisible to the public, they are the true auteurs of the medium, the ones who are most responsible for creating the programs. The producers he includes range from James L. Brooks, whose series include The Mary Tyler Moore Show, Taxi, Tracy Ullman, and The Simpsons, to Sherwood Schwartz, creator of Gilligan's Island and The Brady Bunch, not to mention A Very Brady Christmas. Producers' names are becoming more familiar to TV audiences. Stephen Bochco is one of the best examples.
I think you're beginning to see whole audiences following different creators, especially upscale audiences. I think it's no coincidence that Stephen Bochco's programs are not promoed when he has a new program, not so much promoed by their stars, but promoed by the producer. At first, it was a sort of simple thing, like from the people who gave you Hill Street Blues. But with Civil Wars, his recent program, his name was used in promoting the series.
Let's look at sitcoms and look at some of the producers there who you've singled out. Let's start with Paul Henning. He's somebody you've been writing about since your first book. He's the creator of the Beverly Hillbillies, Petticoat Junction, Green Acres. What does that add up to?
Well, there's a definite kind of aesthetic associated with Henning. His own life, he was a kid from the Ozarks who came to California, specifically Beverly Hills, working in Hollywood, and became a millionaire. Is it just a coincidence that that's the story of Jed Clampett, and that his whole career is obsessed with this idea of contrasting the life of the bi-coastal and well-to-do versus middle American just plain folks?
You know, Green Acres drives me crazy because it's on every weekday night on Nickelodeon, on Nick at Night.
You're really conservative, Terry.
Well, I just really detest the series. I don't think I've ever watched a full episode. I just get, like, a minute in, I think, like, oh, I can't watch any more of this. And I've never kind of gotten beyond that. I know some people are really passionate and obsessed by it or something. Certainly, a lot of people must be watching it. Maybe you can explain to me what the appeal is.
You know, some people like Emile Zola, others like Louis Buñuel. What Green Acres does that's so interesting to some people is that it explodes all the conventions of naturalistic narrative. And there's a kind of pleasure in this. I think one of the reasons that Green Acres is the way it is because now we're going into the final years of what was Henning's 12-year dominance in sitcoms. And they were simply running out of plots. And so not bound by the kinds of rules that tend to bind, you know, people committed to naturalistic narrative or social realism or whatever. They just went crazy. He just went crazy. Arnold the Pig is, you know, writing a book about television. The hens lay square eggs. And there is the Eddie Albert character, who is a lawyer, a graduate of an Ivy League school, and represents naturalistic post-Cartesian mind. And he's living in a world where nothing he knows is worth anything. So there's a kind of fun in that. I mean, if you're watching Green Acres because you're interested in the development of characterization, a realistic look at contrasts between rural and urban life and so forth, it will fail on that level every time. But if you watch a lot of Brady Bunch, Leave It to Beaver, Donna Riccio, and so forth, it's nothing but a refreshing change.
Let's look at Norman Lear, who is a name that a lot of people will recognize. He's one of the producers who has visibility, and he created All in the Family, Maude, Good Times, The Jeffersons, Sanford and Son, One Day at a Time, Mary Hartman, and his latest, The Powers That Be. Single out a couple of traits that you think he brought to television.
Well, Norman Lear is probably the easiest auteur to identify. His obsession with problems such as racism, sexism, ageism, ethnocentricity, and things like that. Suddenly, these become the conversation at the dinner table and in the living room, whereas in most sitcoms before Norman Lear, the conversation is, can I have a new mink coat, or you forgot my birthday this year, or that kind of thing. Do you know that he went with the pilot to All in the Family as early as 1969 to ABC, which had finished in last place every year since television came on the air. And they would not even air the pilot because they were too afraid of the implications of a program, especially a comedy program, that talked about racism and so forth.
Let's look at another producer. And this is Aaron Spelling, who created the Mod Squad. And along with Leonard Goldberg, he created Charlie's Angels, The Love Boat, Fantasy Island. Spelling created Dynasty, and his latest is Beverly Hills 90210. To me, all of his shows are Fantasy Island in one way or another. They're just so, they're so improbable. They're so TV.
Well, you might be interested to know that one of his first, or I should say his first successful show, which was The Mod Squad, was actually seen as an important step in social realism in television crime portrayals. It was the first show that abandoned what had been TV's sort of monolithic worship of the middle-aged, white, male crime fighter working alone or with a partner to protect and serve the city. Instead, he integrated the police, placed blacks and women in the department, and that was really his innovation. It was a typical of a television innovation in that it was a move toward a new invention based on conventions. By that I mean so that in Mod Squad and The Rookies and SWAT and his other police shows, we still had a white male presence as the kind of father figure who took care of planning things, even though now the action was out on the streets with blacks and women and young white men. Charlie's Angels was maybe the best example of that.
You're going to make a case for Charlie's Angels as a feminist show?
Charlie's Angels makes the case for itself as a feminist show in the beginning of each episode. We see the three angels shown as having been members of the police department, but because of institutional sexism, they were made crossing guards and office clerks. And what they really wanted to do was fight crime. And so, as the voiceover tells us, Charlie took them away from all of that and is using them so that they can become, to the best of their abilities, the great detectives and cops that they really are. So that was not a secret subtext discovered by a critic. That was the intention of the show as stated in every episode.
Yeah, I know, but it's such this kind of TV version of feminism, you know. And they have
great
haircuts.
The TV version of feminism may indeed be the TV version of feminism may indeed be the version of feminism that's most salient to most Americans. Whether TV is the cause or the effect is a problem that I'm still not completely prepared to address.
David Mark is the co-author of Primetime, Prime Movers, published by Little Brown. This is Fresh Air.